This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hey everybody, this is episode number 57 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And it has been an action-packed week, what with the Pro Tour. I couldn't even say it. It's, so much is going on. My brain is full. The words are just having a hard time coming out. But so much has been going on with the Pro Tour and the ramifications from the Pro Tour, and we are going to dish about it tonight. But before we do, let's go ahead, as we always do, and talk about our Woman of Excellence, or our Young Woman of Excellence. Hallie, why don't you tell everybody why our Woman of Excellence rocks so hard?
Sure. So our Woman of Excellence this week is Mia Carlson. We've talked about Mia on the show before. I believe she is the young lady who cosplayed as young Liliana, heretical healer. And this past weekend, she was at PAX East and she cosplayed as Narset. Mia is a really great Magic player. I believe she's 11 years old, but she, you know, plays in local tournaments with her dad all the time. She wins pre-releases. She loves playing Magic. She's a huge fan of Melissa DeTora, and her dad has, you know, reached out to Melissa and Frank Lepore, and so, you know, they've become, you know, friends of the family. And, you know, she has such a great spunk, you know. I think she's just a really cool kid, and, you know, I look forward to seeing all that she does in the future.
Awesome. She got to meet Morrow too.
Oh, right. I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, there's a picture of her famously talking to Morrow in her Liliana getup, and she's just so great, and she has such a passion for the game, and it's nice to see like the next generation come up, and it's also nice to see parents be so supportive of something like that, you know. And you know, she kicks a lot of butt, her and her dad, Joachim, I pronounced it right. And they go to tournaments all the time together. She actually started playing Dredgevine or Vengevine. And I was just like, oh my God, little girl. And I love that so much. So she kicks a lot of butt, and we just adore her. So keep up the good work, Mia. We can't wait to see more of you. Before we get started talking about the Pro Tour, let's talk about what we did this weekend. So Chris, you and I got the chance to play in States on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us how your States went?
It did not go the best, unfortunately. I opted to do Blue Tron instead of Blue-White Gifts Tron that I've been working on, because it felt like I knew the deck better. And I still feel that, even after going. The first round, I had to face one of my local player friends, Mike, and he was playing Merfolk. And Merfolk is always a very difficult matchup for Blue Tron in general. But the second game was a little closer, but unfortunately, I just could not get there versus him. The second round, I played versus a rat deck, which was just very strange to me, because like I literally haven't played like a rat deck since I played in my living room with my ex-boyfriend like 10 million years ago.
So, oh, you said rat?
Yeah.
R-A-T.
Yeah.
Oh.
I heard red deck.
I did,
rat.
Too.
Oh, no. Rat. Rat. So it was a rat deck. But it seemed really cool, and the guy that played it was super nice. But I ended up beating him in two games. So I went a little ahead and was like, we can come back from this. But then round three, I faced this like really difficult Death and Taxes deck. And I have never actually had to play against Death and Taxes, so that was a little trying. It was just way too much for me. Too many Flicker Wisps. Round four, I played Junk, and that was kind of a hard road, followed by Jund in round five. And at that point, I was just kind of disheartened, and I was like, no more Modern. I can't deal with this right now. And the loss in the fifth round was just kind of sad, because the second game I had brought him to one, and I just couldn't top deck anything else to deal with his threats to seal the game, so we ended up going to three. But I still like Blue Tron. I still think it's cool. I'm going to be making some changes to the blue-white version of the deck and kind of roll from there. So that is possibly what I'll be taking with me to the Open this weekend. I'm still waiting to see if I can get the remaining pieces to make it work, though. But I'm still glad I went, and I still had a lot of fun. One of my favorite things about going was getting to see people that I only ever get to see at modern events, and so that was really nice. And I got to see Kate, who always pilots Merfolk, and she's super nice, and my Lantern Control friend, and that was just really cool. So I just definitely like this little, like, niche, like, modern community that kind of exists here, and so it felt good to run into people that I knew.
Yeah, I did not do very well either. I just wasn't feeling it, and I just wasn't expecting the metagame to be as diverse as it was. Like, I knew that Modern was healthy again now that the Eldrazi are gone, but, like, I played just things I was not prepared for. The I actually think we played the same Death and Taxes player, Chris, so let me...
Oh, yeah.
Let me get there. This is where I lost it.
Well, I think
it.
I saw you, and he sat across from me. I was trying to, like, wave to you, be like, he's got the blinky thing. So I was going to, like, blink my hands at you to be like, blink, watch out for Flicker Wisp.
What would the blink hand motion look like?
Like me, like kind of like...
opening and closing your
yes,
hands.
Yes, yes.
Like,
I
was a booby grab?
Sort of. Like I was trying to warn her. I was like, Aaron...
All right, so let me walk you through this. So Mono White is not a good matchup for Ad Nauseam anyways. Like, all you need to do is just drop a Thalia, and you can pretty much just sit this one out. Like, I cannot... if I can't do anything about Thalia, I'm just fucked. And so, of course, he plays Thalia. And then he follows it up with a reminder. This is a modern tournament. He plays a Thraben Inspector.
Good card.
Oh, I'm not done. So Thali is on the board. Thraben Inspector. Again, modern stance. And then he plays an Eldrazi Displacer.
Mm. Ooh, so he got to draw all the cards.
Modern states. And so I'm already not having a good time because there's Thalia. And then Vring Windmare joins the party. And then I see, and then he swings in with everything, and I say to myself, I'm gonna lose to a Thraben Inspector in modern. And so at that point, I just, all my fucks were gone. I just went from, like, full fucks, like my tank of fucks. Fuck, you know, the when you're looking at your gas tank and the arrow just drops, just no fucks. So I was already really dismayed after that. And then, like, I ended up playing his friend who was on Jund, and I just didn't care. Like, I went, Jund is also kind of a bad matchup for me. If I don't mulligan a Leyline of Sanctity, I just lose because they have, like, 9 discard spells and they just sleep on that, and I don't really have much of a chance. And so I didn't mulligan as aggressively as I probably should have. I had an amazing just snap hand, like 7 cards, and I was like, I'm gonna keep this. And then he's like, Duress, Thoughtseize, Inquisition, and it's just like, alright, I'm out. So I went and got Chinese. I was very disappointed. But then afterwards, Chris decided that we were gonna go. Chris got to pick where we went for lunch, and she took us to a very interesting place called Ella's. So why don't you tell the people about Ella's, Chris, for those who've never been?
Okay. Ella's Deli is a restaurant in Madison, Wisconsin. It's pretty famous. I don't know if it's ever been featured in any television shows or anything like that, but it has a carousel, like, right outside, and inside there's lots of, like, animatronic-esque, like, puppets and, like, I don't even know how to describe it to you, like, there's trains.
Dancing feet.
Yeah, there's trains, like, going around the place, and toys everywhere, and it's just very kitschy, but in, like, an awesome way. And I, like, first went there, like, 2 or 3 years ago, and I was like, what the hell is this? And I was very terrified. But then I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And they have ice cream. Their menu is, like, a bajillion pages long. And, like, I literally, like, stuffed myself silly. Like, it was so good. But it's a very interesting place to go. So any Madison folks that may be listening to this, you know what I'm talking about.
Was there, like, a giant banana there?
Yeah, it was a giant banana.
With a face.
Yeah, with a face.
Oh, okay.
And the feet picture, the feet dance. Like, Chris took a video of the feet dancing.
Yes. Oh, they move.
Yes. They move.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
They're, like, right next to the kitchen area, and they kind of just go, whoop. Yeah. Move back.
I was. We were joking that, like, those are the feet of the people who tried to leave, and they, like, just turned them into, like, dancing feet. We were sitting in front of a giant cuckoo clock, and I mean, it's giant. It's about as tall as Hallie. It's massive. And so it's stuck to the wall, and there's like dancing people that like pop out of it. It's like Tales from the Crypt and Willy Wonka had a baby.
Oh, God.
And then the weirdest part of all is I think it's like Jewish owned and operated. Like they've got blintzes, gefilte, yeah, bagels and lox. I mean, they had all of it. And it's funny because all of the very Jewish food items were written so much bigger on the menu than like the other food items. It's so, like, you're looking at the menu and they're like, burgers, ham, bagels, and lox. And it's just in bold caps and you're like, what the fuck? And then, and you just wouldn't expect that. Like, you'd expect it to be kind of like carnival-y and maybe they'll have like corn dogs, maybe some ice cream. But then you go and there's just like all this stuff. And then they have like kosher food and other things. And it's just like, what? Like, you just don't know what to expect at this place. It's just all so random and so kitschy. And I was just like, I'm slightly terrified, but I my eyes just couldn't sit still. Like, Chris is enjoying her Sunday and my eyes just could not stay in one place. As I was just wandering around the room and I'm finding something else to look at, my eyes just were being assaulted. But it was cute, but it was also just slightly terrifying, where it's like, what the fuck? Oh my, there's like a giant robot that greets you at the door. And like, it's just, and then like they have different birthday parties with like themes. There's like the Raggedy Ann party. There's like the Sparkle Rainbow party. And it's like, I want a Sparkle Rainbow party. And just, you know, you just don't know what you're going to expect at this place. I was kind of happy that she picked it because it was a great conversation starter at the very least.
Yeah. And they have good food and the people there are pretty cool. So I would definitely recommend it to anyone who's never been there before.
Cool. We had Kaiser rolls, right?
Oh my God, they were so good. What are they called again? They're bulkies. I was like, holy shit, this is the best, like,
yeah,
breaded thing I have ever had in my entire life. Oh, so good.
And then you asked if you could buy any, like, yes, to go, and she was like, they're $2.50 a piece. And for like a minute, you like debated it. You were like,
I was like, damn. It was, oh my God, it's so good. I can't even describe it to you. You just have to have one, but it was everything.
And the milkshakes had like cotton candy coming out of them. Like, you bought a milkshake and then it was like a stick of cotton candy coming out of it. And it was just massive. Everything was just like huge orders of food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the Pro Tour was this past weekend. It was a standard Pro Tour. Star-studded top eight. John Finkel. Hey.
Hey.
Shota Yasuka from Team Hallelujah, who we love. Andrea Mengucci. Brad Nelson. Chris. Mm. Brad Nelson. Yay. Luis Salvato from Argentina. Steve Rubin. Steve Rubin. Apparently, Steve Rubin is that guy that you've never heard of, but everybody else has. Like, he's awesome, and you've never heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've heard nothing but glowing things about the guy, but I knew nothing about him prior to going into this. Seth Manfield top eighted. Luis Scott Vargas. Yay!
Yay!
And it was also a very diverse top eight. I mean, we had, there was, John Finkel was on Seasons Pass, which we will certainly get to. Shota was on Esper Dragons. Andrea was on Bant Company. Brad was on Green Red Goggles. Luis was on, I just noticed that Luis's occupation is chicken businessman. I'm really curious what that means now. So Luis Salvato was on Red White Goggles. Steve Rubin was on Green White Tokens. Seth Manfield was on Esper Control No Dragons. And LSV was on a Black Green Sacrifice deck. We've been calling it Aristocrats, but he's asked people to call it Sacrifice, and we'll certainly respect that. So did you guys happen to catch any of this? Like, what did you think of the format or the top eight?
I thought it was awesome. When was the last time that we saw eight different decks in a top eight?
Yeah, for sure.
And none of them being aggro.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was
like
the best.
I guess you could say Bant Company is, but it's like, or even the Aristocrats deck is, but like, there was no Mono White Humans wasn't here, Mono Red wasn't here. They just felt like we were watching real games.
I didn't really get to watch any of it, but I did really like the list that Finkel had for Seasons Past. I liked Bread's deck list as well, and I really enjoyed the Esper Control deck that Seth Manfield had. And I would probably put together like any one of these decks to play with it. And I think I said this last time we recorded, but I like that Seth is giving mad love to Narset and to New Jace because I feel like they needed a place to call home. And I also like because it's running Sphinx in there. Like, I had to like do a double take on that. And I was like, oh my God, Sphinx is in here. I'm like, I love this. I have a foil one. Aww. So yeah, I would totally do that. And the green white tokens deck that Ruben had was pretty sweet as well. And some of the decks that weren't in the top eight seemed pretty interesting as well. Like this blue red TT deck that was in there, and a black red control deck. So I'm happy to see that people are doing other things that are not, you know, just a, you know, like a, just a ramp deck, or it's not, you know, anything involving like Eldrazi maybe necessarily, or just Bancoco. Like there were a lot of different options that were in there. And so I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I really liked Seth Manfield's deck. I really enjoy decks that play a lot of Planeswalkers as their threat. And it's been a while since I've played them, so when I scrolled past this list and I was like, oh, look at 8 Planeswalkers. That seems like the perfect amount. But I was kind of surprised to see Jace make an appearance, which is cool. And I was actually kind of happy because Sphinx, when it got spoiled, I was like, I think this card's going to be, like, pretty good. It's just a one of. And then I saw it and I was like, oh, look at, my dreams are coming true. So I was super excited to see that. I did catch a bit of Gabby's coverage, even though I couldn't watch a ton. And she seemed like she was doing wonderfully. And it seemed like she was well received. So I'm excited to catch up on the coverage this week.
Did you notice that Seth's list had Jace, Friends, Prodigy in the sideboard, but not in the main?
Look at him hiding over there.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. I was looking at the list and I was like, okay, this looks pretty fine. And then I was like, oh, that's the other Jace. Where's the, and it was a sideboard card. Like, I want to know, I'm pretty sure he'll write about this, but I'm really interested to see what fueled that decision, because we just, you know, we're so used to Jace kind of being an auto include in these control decks. And it was really interesting to see him. Not only is he not running a playset, but he's not running them in the main. I'm anxious to see what that's about.
Yeah. I'm really excited to actually watch like a lot of the deck techs from this pro tour in particular, because there were so many decks that took different angles on the format, so it'll be interesting to see what everybody's justifications were.
Yeah, there were so many decks. There's so many cool decks at this Pro Tour that I can't even decide what I want to play in Standard right now.
Yeah.
And what I love about the Standard format is that last night I went on Magic Online and I built 2 different Standard decks for about a third of the price that I spent on a Standard deck last season.
Nice.
Like, This is amazing. Like, I'm so glad that there are no more fetch lands to worry about, no more, like, super expensive staples, and everyone can just kind of play whatever they want in Standard.
I was actually going to ask you that, Hallie. You know, you bring up a really great point about the diversity and that there are so many decks that you can play. You know, with that said, though, do you think that most of these decks are viable, or do you feel that, like, you know, while you can play one of these decks, that there's still, like, you know, do you feel that some of these decks hold up as well as others do?
I definitely didn't get to watch enough coverage to say anything for certain. I do think that the fact that we saw a lot of decks in the top 8 is a good sign for the diversity of the format. And I'm definitely going to be testing a lot of Standard this week. A couple friends and I are going to be testing on Magic Online a lot. So if you check back with me next week, I may have a definitive answer for you. But right now, I'm just kind of like in magical Christmas land, feeling like everything is possible.
Yeah, that was me. I was on Puka Trade most of the weekend, and so my plan is, because I'm going to GP Minneapolis next month, my plan is to have a Standard deck ready by May 1st. So that way I can just spend May, because it's at the end of May, just practicing and grinding or whatever. And so I'm kind of like you, Hallie, in that there were so many decks I wanted to build. I was just kind of requesting everything, where I was like, well, I'm going to ask for 2 Kalidas, and I'm going to ask for 1 more Goggles, and I need 3 Dark Petitions, and I'm not putting them all in the same deck, but I just want to be ready, because I want to, you know, I want to try Green Red Goggles, and I want to try a Seasons Past, and I might want to stick with Esper Control, and I just want to make sure that I, you know, I can play anything I want to. You know, in this format, I really, really don't want to be tied down to just one deck. Mm-hmm. So, but I want to talk about the Seasons Past deck, because this deck, I'm still trying to even. Like, I literally spent much of the deck tech clutching my chest, because it was everything I want in a deck. So Seasons Past was built by Reed Duke, Huey Jensen, Andrew Cuneo, and I believe they were the ones behind it. They had to talk John into playing it. It is a black-green control deck that is based around Dark Petition and Seasons Past. And Seasons Past was a card that we got to spoil on Magic Mike's, and I admit I wasn't too hype about it. Like, Evan and Ruben were like, this card's going to see play. And I was like, yeah, in EDH. And so... I didn't really, I was like, it's cute, like, I like the art, and I'm trying to, like, find nice things to say about it. I was like, well, it promotes life in the storyline. Help me out here, guys. And so it ended up being good. And the way that this deck works is it basically just kills all of the things, makes you discard all of the things, and then you play Seasons Past and you refuel your hand. So you can grab a Read the Bones, you can grab a Languish, you can grab a Duress, and then you basically just refill your hand, and you have Dark Petition. And at some point, you can start looping Dark Petition and Seasons Past. Mm. And you can just always keep your hand full of gas and just rip your opponent to shreds, keep the board clear, and then get something like Nissa, Kalidus, or just your man lands to kill your opponent. And so the minute I saw this, I was completely in love with it. I built it on Magic Online. So Hallie, if you want to play Seasons Past, I'm your girl. Cool. So I did order some of the cards for it, and assuming that nothing really changes, this is what I would like to start playing in May.
Nice.
Because I just don't like losing to creature decks, and especially humans. Like, I lost to humans the other night, and I was pretty not happy about it. So when you give me a deck that lets me kill all the things, I'm pretty on board for that. So I'm really excited to play this deck. And there's also, like, an Orbs of Warding in the sideboard. Yes! I was just like, this is everything I want to be doing. Virulent Plague, Orbs of Warding, Nissa's Renewal, one of Nissa's Renewal. I mean, come on. This is awesome. So I was really excited about that. I also really like how some of these decks were a thing before, but when a pro dedicates their time to like tuning it and refining it, like Brad's Goggles deck, for example, Green Red Ramp has been a thing forever, but Brad took out a lot of the kind of redundant ramp spells and just gave it a plan B of burn. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times with a ramp deck, you're drawing like the wrong half of your deck. And so if you're not able to ramp into big things, you can just throw, you know, a really big Fall of the Titans at someone and kill them. And that was something that people had never really tried before. And same with Seth's Esper Control deck. It's like we'd use Esper Dragons for so long, but, you know, Seth was able to put his eye on it and fine tune it in a really, really great way. And so it was just nice to see these sort of polished decks come out of the woodwork where they weren't as tuned before. Mm-hmm. So, I also got to see Gabby on coverage. I thought she looked fantastic. I thought she did great. And she was very well received as usual. And, I hope that they bring her back for more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, also at the Pro Tour, they made some announcements. Yeah. So the first announcement that they made is that there are going to be no more Modern Pro Tours. How do you guys feel about that?
I'm cool with it. Yeah. It definitely seemed like having a Modern Pro Tour put a lot of pressure on Wizards to keep the format fresh and to, you know, make sure that, you know, the same decks weren't winning the Pro Tour every year. And so then we saw a lot of bannings, and then we saw a lot of pros breaking formats and then even more bannings. And it just didn't seem like the format was in a very great place.
I'm kind of sad to see it go. Like, I understand why a lot of the pros weren't huge fans of it. But I also feel like when you're watching, you know, the Pro Tour and all these people who have tested countless hours with these decks, you're getting a lot more out of watching them than you are just, like, a GP. And yes, people are good at GPs as well, but I feel like there's just a different level of play and game skill on both sides of the table when you're watching the Pro Tour. And I love Modern as a format, but I wasn't a big fan of the bannings right beforehand every time, and trying to change it as frequently as they were changing it to make viewers happy.
Yeah, I agree with Katie. I'm sad to see it go. I understand the reasoning as to why. I mean, when I went through and read Aaron Forsyth's reasoning as to why they wanted to eliminate the Modern Pro Tour and what he felt that Modern should be, it kind of made a little more sense, but I enjoy watching Modern. I like, you know, doing that, but I get that a lot of pros were concerned about people being rewarded for repetition and practicing with their deck as opposed to being innovative with deck building or being good at drafting and stuff like that. So I can see why they would get rid of it in favor of highlighting a new set and going through and rewarding people for their other skills.
I love Modern. I was very sad to hear about it. You know, I think for me, it's that, you know, you can't deny that having a format be a Pro Tour format, it does give a format a certain amount of validity and just sort of recognition. And I think Modern is going to lose a little bit of that, you know, by not having a Pro Tour. However, as long as it still has the support, as long as we still have the same number of GPs, as long as we're still seeing it as an open format, as long as it's still a PPTQ format, and I think even it can be an RPTQ format, I'm completely fine with that. I think if we were losing the Pro Tour and support was being cut across the board, I would be a little concerned. But from what I've seen, Modern is very, very healthy, very, very popular. It doesn't seem like there's any sign of that slowing down. And so as long as support for the format is still coming from somewhere, I'm going to be happy and I'm fine with it. I do like Aaron Forsyth's explanation. He did write a really nice post talking about what we want Modern to be. And he says that Modern should be a fun way to play Magic, first and foremost. He says it should offer different types of decks and gameplay that what you typically see in Standard, consist of cards that we are willing and able to reprint, have a diverse top-tier metagame featuring over a dozen archetypes, not be dominated by fast, non-interactive decks. Well, there goes me. I was like, oh, man. And then have as small a ban list as possible. It accomplishes all the previous goals. And then below that, he talks about what is Standard. And he said Standard showcases the themes, mechanics, and flavor, changes significantly and dynamically. And that's also another good point, is maybe the new two-block structure will make the Pro Tours more interesting. Right. So that way you're not having to have that oddball Modern Pro Tour to kind of give you a break from it or shake things up. Mm-hmm. So I'm fine with the changes for the most part. There was also an announcement made by Helen Bergio elaborating on the bathroom situation in GP Charlotte. And first off, I loved her blazer. I don't know if you guys watched the announcement. She had this really sharp-looking white blazer on. She looks pretty fierce. So before I even hit play on the announcement, I was like, I love her blazer. Oh, let me hit play. So then I hit play, and I was a little disappointed with the announcement because she made it sound so novel. So, like, she was talking about the GP Charlotte thing, and I do appreciate that she brought up the trans, if it was a trans issue and an LGBT issue. But then she was like, well, we've made all the single occupancy bathrooms unisex bathrooms. You're welcome. And I was like, well, we already consider them unisex bathrooms. and trans people often have to use single use bathrooms. Like, if I'm going somewhere and I don't know what I'm in for when I go to the bathroom, if I don't know what's going to happen if I go in a women's room, I will often just save myself the trouble and go in a single occupancy bathroom. So that's always been a last resort for trans people. So there was nothing really novel there, like nothing I really felt warranted an announcement. And it just still feels like they did say that they were going to find other places in the region to maybe have GPs and events. So, you know, if nothing changes on a political scale, you know, they may not see GPs in Charlotte anymore, which is unfortunate. But overall, I was just kind of underwhelmed with the announcement. I guess I was just expecting more. Mm-hmm. I don't know what more is, but, you know, they just sounded very proud of themselves. They were like, well, we've given you unisex bathrooms. And I was like, well, we've always had those. And so, and they're still on a different floor. So I'm still having to go farther than everybody else. There's no parity there. I'm still having to go farther, feeling banished, you know, so that I can use the bathroom when, you know, I'm a woman, I should be allowed to use the women's bathroom. If there's a trans man, he's a man. He should be able to go in the men's room. You know, the unisex bathroom does sort of feel like a punishment sometimes. And it just wasn't the great announcement that I had in mind.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. Speaking of not so great announcements. So there were some changes made to the Pro Tour Hall of Fame. We'll start off with that. Appearance fee adjustments. In order to ensure the Pro Tour Hall of Fame is a sustainable program and an exclusive special commemoration to the Pro Tour's best players, we'll be making changes to the Hall of Fame starting with the 2016 class. These appearance fee adjustments will be as follows. Hall of Famers will only receive an appearance fee of $1,500 for competing at the Pro Tour that features the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Previously, $1,500 at all Pro Tours and the World Magic Cup. So now you are only going to get $1,500, if I'm understanding this correctly, for the Pro Tour that you get your nomination at. If you go to another Pro Tour, you do not get your appearance fee. Just for being a Hall of Famer. Next was the Pro Tour Players Club Platinum status changes. And here's where shit hits the fan. I hurt just talking about this. I just want to... I'm really having to psych myself up to talk about this. So the adjustments to the Platinum Pro Player appearance fees effective after the conclusion of Pro Tour Eldritch Moon are as follows. Platinum Pros will receive an appearance fee of $250 for competing at Pro Tours, previously $3,000. So Pros right now, Platinum level Pros, when they go to a Pro Tour, they get $3,000 just to show up. That is now being slashed to $250. An appearance fee of $250 for competing at the World Magic Cup, down from $1,000. and an appearance fee of $250 for competing at a World Magic Cup qualifier, down from $500. All other Pro Tour Players Club benefits remain unchanged. These decisions were not made lightly and were finalized after much discussion. The appearance fees we awarded for Platinum were meant to assist in maintaining the professional lifestyle. However, upon scrupulous evaluation, we believe that this is not succeeding at this goal and have made the decision to decrease the appearance fees. Instead, we will be increasing the amount of prize money awarded at our biggest tournament of the year, the World Championship. The community exploded. Mm-hmm. There is now a trending worldwide topic on Twitter, hashtag pay the pros. People are very, very upset about this, pros and non-pros. What do you guys think about this? Like, you, your thoughts, feelings?
The part I'm really confused about is when she says, or when the announcement says, that they weren't succeeding in their goal, so they're cutting appearance fees. Like, does that mean that they're changing what the goal is? Does that mean that they've just given up on the goal, so they're like, ah, fuck it, we're just gonna not have that anymore? Or, like... like, I feel like that whole sentence was, like, a big point of discussion where it's just, like, you know, maybe you could have stated a new goal, like, anything. I don't really know their reasoning. But I'm not a fan. And it's not like they cut it by, like, $500. You know, the $3,000 down to $250, that's a significant change. That's not just, like, oh, we're chipping off $50 here, $50 there. And I understand that they induct new people into the Hall of Fame, you know, every year. And every year there's more Platinum Pros. But I don't feel like it's growing at a rate where it's out of control for how much money they're being paid. And switching it 75% of the way through the season means a lot of people wasted or are wasting money on traveling to events to try and get to platinum status when that's not like the bee's knees anymore.
Yeah, I'm definitely, I was confused by the same sentence that Katie was confused by, because I was reading it and I was like, okay, so you can't pay the pros enough to maintain their lifestyle, so you're going to pay them even less? This, like, what, where is the logic in the sentence? And I'm sure, you know, because of this, I'm sure that there are a lot of pieces that we don't have. I'm sure that there's a lot of information that we don't have yet. But I feel sorry for those affected by these changes. I mean, a lot of people worked very hard to maintain a certain status as a player because they were under the impression that they were receiving certain benefits. And I realize that, you know, there's a stipulation that says that, you know, these things can be changed at any time and Wizards reserves the right to do that. I understand that, but I still hurt for a lot of, you know, these players who, you know, made this their lifestyle and made this a commitment. And I frankly can't wrap my mind around what, like, how Wizards thought that the pro community would take this announcement. I realize they said that these decisions weren't made lightly, but I don't know. I'm still grasping at words here. I'm so flabbergasted by this. Another thing that I should bring up, I guess, is that you know, for Hall of Famers, it seems like Hall of Famers were not affected as much, and a lot of Hall of Famers aren't as outraged as, you know, pros were about the Platinum cuts. A lot of Hall of Famers, you know, many of them have day jobs, many of them can afford to, you know, travel for Magic. Many of them don't travel to Magic tournaments every week like these Platinum grinders. So it doesn't seem like that necessarily was a bad change. I'm just still not sure what to make of this decrease in Platinum rates, though.
Yeah, I'm with Katie about the ambiguousness of the, or ambiguity of the sentence, I guess, that they explain about decreasing these appearance fees. And my take on it, and maybe this is completely off base, was just that, okay, so are you saying you weren't succeeding in your goal because you felt that perhaps funds were not being used as you felt they should be, or that you were like overcompensating someone for their lifestyle. Like, that's the problem that I had, because it's like, after, you know, scrupulous, it's like, okay, so you were really that concerned about this that you like did a fucking investigation, like you were CSIing this shit. And that's the thing that concerns me. Like, I guess if I was even a platinum pro player, I would be concerned to be like, well, what is Wizards think I'm doing with this money, and why do they really care that much? Like, do they want me here or don't they? Because even decreasing the fees, I would feel like, okay, so you make this announcement, you say that you're going to cut my fee in half, you still want me here, you still want me to have all these good feelings about going, but it just kind of feels like you just shit all over me. And I feel bad for these people just because, like, this is their dream. This is something they've worked very hard for. And, like, myself, I worked very hard to become a funeral director. Like, I got to live my dream. That's over and done with. These people are still chasing their dream every day, and I don't want anything to get in the way of that. I mean, they probably sacrifice a lot of their time, their sanity, their relationships with friends and family to do something that's really that important to them. And when you figure a $250 appearance fee, you could make that by working at McDonald's for like a week. Like, that's really terrible. And when you figure, you know, depending on where you have to fly to, depending on, you know, the hotel situation, whatever else is involved in all that, like, I've never been behind the scenes to know. I've never been in their position. And I feel like they should be compensated for what they're doing, because they need to be able to, you know, live a, quote, certain lifestyle. But also, you figure these people are also your, quote unquote, entertainment. You know, people tune in every, you know, weekend to watch even just a Star City event to see people that, you know, inspire them to be better Magic players. Then you have people that tune in to watch Grand Prix. You know, these people are putting on like an active performance for you. They are using your product to do that. I would think that you would want to invest in something that is that important to your brand.
I found an article today on Twitter written by a guy named Ferret Steinmetz, who's been, I believe he used to write about Magic. Like, I think I saw his face on Star City a while back. And he wrote an article which really summed up my feelings on the situation. And it's called Why Magic Pros Are Like Professional Writers or the Great Pro Tour Rapture of 2016. It's a very good read. I retweeted it. You should look at it if you haven't already. And he basically says that the reduction to the platinum benefits is terrible. Wizards is definitely wrong. However, the reason that people play Magic has never been about the money. The money has always been terrible. Like, there's nobody who is in an event hall in Poughkeepsie and saying, I want to be platinum because I'm going to make all this money. They do it because they love the game. They do it because they want to see their name in lights. They want to have the trophy. They might want to see their name on Star City's front page. They may want to be a writer someday. But people aren't getting into this the way that some people get into tech, or the way that some people get into real estate and say, I want to retire at 35. That just doesn't happen in the game of Magic. And so you're already not making a lot of money. And, you know, there's a part about when comparing it to the writing industry, there's always going to be somebody willing to write, even though the pay is crap. You know, if you don't want to write and that happens to be not enough money for you, you can certainly stop writing, but somebody's going to take your place because they want to do it that badly. And so if Wizards decides that they're going to stick with this, there are certain unique voices that will be affected. But because of the way that the game is, there are always going to be unique voices that are willing to do it for the money. Despite the money being poor, they want it that bad and they're going to do it. And if five people decide that this isn't the thing for them and they walk away, there will be a new five people. And we can certainly mourn those voices that we lose. But to say that the game would fall apart, or to say that events would stop happening, I'm not necessarily sure that's true. Like, I'm sure that somebody's going to want to keep doing this regardless of the money, like you see in the writing industry. And so we would see new voices. We would see new deck builders. And I'm not saying I want that. Like, I'm not saying I want people to stop. And I'm not saying I want to see those unique voices go, but, you know, I think all of this talk of like the end of the world and the end of the Pro Tour, I just don't think that's going to happen. Like, you know, change happens. People go, new people fill their place. I mean, you see, you know, how many times have you seen people like Ben Rubin? Ben Rubin was a thing back in the day, and he showed up at GP Oakland, and, you know, Chris Pecula was hot and back in the day, and then he had his moment. And this is just the ebb and flow of magic. You know, Finkel can go away and come back and top eight a Pro Tour. This is just the cycle of magic. And so I think that if we were to lose some voices over this, I would be very sad to see that. But ultimately, the way that the game is, as long as the game is amazing, people are going to keep coming forward to chase the dream, to write articles. And so the cycle is going to go on. And so I think that's just something I think we need to remember, is that the money has never been fantastic. And, you know, nobody has gotten into it solely for the money. The money is maybe second or third on the list. And people are ultimately getting into it because they love to do it. And again, I think the changes are wrong. I don't agree with them. But, you know, I think just a little more insight as to how the game works and how the cycle works, you know, just put a really different perspective on things. And I really like the way the Ferret worded it. And hopefully and he brought up another thing too, that he was like, you know, somebody brought up the fact that, you know, the pros sell a lot of cards, and he was saying it's not the pro that moves the cards. It's the people who follow the pro. And as long as there is a pro, you know, somebody's going to follow them and then open the cards. And so it doesn't necessarily matter who's filling that spot. Somebody will fill that spot, and therefore packs will still get opened. People will still go to events, and things will go on.
There was a bit of talk today among the pros about boycotting the next PT. Do you guys think that would have an impact? Do you think that might actually be a possibility, or...
I'm not sure if it'll be possible. I know Matt Sperling was advocating it, and I'm not sure. I didn't really see much of the discussion following it, so I'm not sure how many people would actually do it. But I think if there were a large enough boycott, it would definitely attract a lot of attention.
Yeah, I think so as well. I guess just the whole thing just makes me sad, because it does seem it's less about the game. It's about money, not to these pro players, but to, unfortunately, a business. You know, they're looking at it from a financial standpoint, and so it's kind of bigger than it's just a game. Yeah, it's a game, but the game is owned by a company, and they're gonna do what suits their best interests. So it just kind of makes me feel sad, because it reminds me of just any other job you could have, where it's like, okay, well, you're not going to do the job, someone else will. Mm-hmm. And that kind of just makes me feel even worse about the whole thing. Because if there is a response to this, and it's just kind of like, well, you don't like it, see you later, then that would make me feel, I guess, even shittier than I already do right now for people that, yeah, it's not about the money, but you need money to survive, unfortunately. And if you're making a living as a pro player, going around and playing a game that you do love and put your heart and soul into, you still need to be able to pay the bills. And you can't pay the bills on good feelings and hugs and hearts and shit.
Right.
I'm torn. It's like, you know, on the one hand, it's like, I agree that you mentioned that you can't pay the bills, but I would argue that some aren't even paying their bills now. Again, the money's so small. But with that said, though, you know, you're hearing all these stories about how much Magic is being sold, and how Wizards is having these record years of, like, you know, biggest pre-release ever with what was a Battle for Zendikar, like, broke pre-release records and things like that. And, you know, Shadows is obviously a big hit. I'm not really finance girl, so I don't keep up with all the reports, but, you know, if it does seem like Wizards is doing all right. And so, you know, for them to be talking about how successful they are and then to follow it up with these cuts, it doesn't really make sense. I could see if they were going through some shit where they were like, oh, we've, you know, Magic's just not selling like it's used to, and we're not filling events like we used to, and we've lost like 7% revenue. I think that would make sense, but it seems strange to say you're doing so well and then to be cutting corners everywhere else. You know, not only are you cutting the players' fees, but you're also, we're not seeing as many events on camera as we used to. And these are all signs that maybe things aren't so rosy, you know, when it comes to how much they're generating, because for all intents and purposes, these aren't the actions of a company that's doing immensely well. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And also, likewise, you know, when you see other games, you know, we talk about how little money these guys are making. When you look at games like Hearthstone, League of Legends, even Epic, the new card game Epic has a massive, you know, tournament pool. Again, you look at Magic and you're like, why can't we do that? And I know the guys on Magic Mike's love to really beat that topic home of, you know, why can't we get sponsorships? You know, why can't we have jackets with like Ultra Pro and Legion or whoever else you want on them to, hell, even maybe Bud Light or Monster or something like that. You know, there's all these opportunities to bring money in if money's the problem that nobody's taking. You know, when you look at like a figure skating event, you see that wall with just banks and companies and whatever. And it's like, why don't we do that? Like, why don't we get Mountain Dew or Nike or whoever? You know, and there's just so many other ways that we could be bringing money in if money's the problem. And even if it's not a problem, bring money in to pay these guys. We're like, you know, if you can't fit the bill for that, I find it interesting that you don't have anybody else who can.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it in other games, and the other games make it look so effortless. And it's just like, you know, why, when you know, and they blow you away with how much they're doing. And those guys literally can live on the game. Like, you can play League of Legends and that's your job. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if they make content. Like, I don't know if there's like a writing gig with that, but it literally, I mean, from what I've seen, they just play League of Legends. And they live off of that, and they live comfortably off of that. You know, I see all these Instagram photos of them like going to these locales and really living it up. And meanwhile, you see our pros, and you know, they're having to supplement their income in other ways because it's just not enough. And you know, there's just so many angles to this, and it's just a really heavy topic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's lighten it up a little bit, shall we? Enter the Battlefield premiered today. That is the documentary about pro players that was created by Nathan and Sean, the guys behind Walking the Plains. Hallie, I think you got a chance to watch it first.
I did. I actually watched it a couple times today because it's only an hour long and it was just on a loop all day. So I was just like, you know, do my laundry, watch some Enter the Battlefield, take my dog for a walk, watch Enter the Battlefield, just all day.
What did you think about it?
I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was definitely a great snapshot of life on the Pro Tour, and I would definitely show this to anyone who doesn't play the game and wants to know what I do in my spare time. I actually didn't feel like I learned a whole lot about the players, though, and I was expecting to learn a little bit more about them. You know, we got to see their families a bit, we got to hear, you know, a bit about their personal lives, but if you've been following the Pro Tour for the past 3 years, like I have, you know, you know a lot of the storylines. You've heard about the Peach Garden Oath. You've heard about Melissa De Toro becoming the first woman to top 8 a Pro Tour. You've heard about Lucky Shahar. You've heard about, you know, Patrick Chapin and his quest to, you know, win the world championship. You know, these are all things that are, you know, big parts of the Magic storyline. And, you know, I'd love to share these with other people who are curious about it, but I didn't feel like I got too much out of it or too many new things out of it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's like, you know, I was under the impression that this was going to be something that, like, and don't get me wrong, loved it. Mm-hmm. Very well done. Had a very good time watching it. I watched it twice myself. And, you know, I was just under the impression, though, that this was something that, like, we could show people who'd never played Magic before and they would be able to understand it a little bit better. And I feel like they did that up to a point. There was still a lot of terminology used that I just don't think it was I think a lot of the terminology wasn't inclusive enough. Like, Randy Buehler was telling a story about Chris Pecula, and he was like, and Chris needs to top deck this card. And I was like, well, I know what top decking means, and that I hope he top decks the card. But, you know, if I show this to my dad, you know, I don't know if top deck is like a universal term, like if it's used in poker or anything like that. But my dad's probably not going to know what a top deck is. And so he's going to be like, what does Chris need to do? And so there were just several points throughout the film where I was like, I'm not sure that this is going to be broad enough for people who don't understand. Like, I could still see myself having to sit next to somebody and maybe just answer a couple of questions because they're going to be like, what is this? Why does he need this? What's going on here? And, you know, I just think that it could have been a little bit more approachable at times, but otherwise I thought it was quite good.
Yeah. I guess another thing that I guess I would have liked to see was, more equal coverage of all the people who were involved. You know, we got to see a lot about, you know, Owen's beginnings. We got to see a lot about, you know, where Reed grew up, and we had an interview with, you know, Patrick Chapin's uncle and Shahar Shanhar's family. By the way, Shahar's dad is awesome. I will watch any interview with Shahar Shanhar's father because
his sister is beautiful, too.
Yeah, but the thing about Shahar's dad is he's just so he has this like aura of wisdom about him, and you can tell he's like a really good person who cares a lot about instilling his children with good values, and he is just like, I just love watching him. Like, I
love how he pronounces Shahar's name.
Shahar.
He calls him Shahar.
Yeah.
I was like, oh,
love yeah. It. But at the same time, you know, I loved seeing all that, but I felt like we didn't get enough of, you know, what were Melissa's beginnings? Because, you know, as I've said when we talked about this before, you know, I started playing Magic more seriously after seeing Melissa top 8 Pro Tour Gate Crash. And, you know, that was, you know, a big point in my life where I was just like, wow, you know, maybe I can be really good at this game. Maybe I can do what she did. And I would have liked to hear more about her beginnings and, you know, her start in like the New England Magic scene. And we didn't really get a lot of that. I mean, we heard a couple interviews from, you know, other people in the community talking about her, but we didn't get a lot of her backstory. And I just would have liked to see more of that.
Yeah, I agree. It felt kind of like starting a race at different points where it's like some people had the beginning part where we got to see their family lives. And then, you know, there were some people that came in at different points in their career. And I would have liked it if they all kind of had like the same starting point where it was like, okay, so we start the film off with beginnings. And it's like, here's the whole section on all five people or whoever, you know, childhood first got into Magic. Okay, bam, they're taking off, what that's like, you know, just following them every step of the way. But I just felt like, you know, there were just different, you know, just different paths. And if you were to look at the track, you know, the track that everybody was running on, you know, some just were longer than others or had more twists and turns. And I just would have liked them to be more equal. But I tuned in right at the point they introduced Reed. Like, I saw the Sugarloaf sign and I was like, oh, I'm right on time. And so I hit the play button and it was nice. I didn't know that he made jewelry. I mean, I knew that he was a jeweler, but I didn't know, like, he made it. I got to see his family life and like, it was a really good time. And, I really enjoyed the Owen section. Like, I thought it definitely made Owen a little bit more human. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that his dad passed away and, it definitely made Owen more endearing to me. And, I have to say one of the funniest comments I saw was somebody had taken a screenshot of the point where Frank, Frank Lepore was on the screen with Melissa, and somebody left a comment in I'm sorry. Someone left a comment in Twitch chat that says he smells. I'm sorry. Someone said he smells like a dusty leather book.
What?
Someone said Frank looks like he smells like a dusty leather book. And I just lost it. It was the funniest thing I'd ever seen, and I don't know why.
That's probably like a good smell, though, right?
Yeah,
I know, right?
I love books.
That sounds like a compliment, probably.
It was just such a random comment.
I think Frank would take it as a compliment.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was just the most random thing, and I just lost it when I saw it. So I'm going to have to give him some crap about that when I see him. Like, smells like leather or something. So last but not least, our friend Christine Sprinkle brought up the subject about a Magic convention. Like, she wanted to know why we don't have a Magic convention. You know, PAX was going on, and she was just asking, how come we don't do that? Like, why don't we have something that's not competitive? It's not about playing. It's literally just about the lore, about the people, the players, some cosplay. And she got some really interesting responses about this. And what do you guys think about this? Like, do you think that this is something that we could do? Do you think that we already have that in the form of GPs? Like, what did you think of her idea?
I'm 100% behind it. I know that a couple episodes back I had said that something like that would be a good way to build some good feels between people in the community, and I fully believe that. And I think that Grand Prix are nice, but it is all about the game, as in like a tournament structure. I mean, whether or not it's a challenge, it's a win a box, it's a, you know, the main event for the GP. It's all centered around that. There isn't really anything else. And to have something for everyone, I think would be really, really cool. And the fact that Helen responded and said that they had been considering something like that, I think is a good thing, because I think they'd be kind of foolish not to. I mean, there's just so much more involved in Magic outside of the game.
Yeah, as soon as I saw Christine tweeting about this and saw Helen's response, I was just like, oh my god, Chris's dreams are coming true. I'm so happy for her. But yeah, I'm definitely behind this too. I mean, I'm a competitive player. I make no secret of that. And, you know, I like going to GPs. I like competing. But I feel like I get a lot of opportunities to do that, and casual players don't get quite as many opportunities to play casual Magic on as large a scale as that. And I would love for, you know, people who play the game that way and enjoy those aspects of the game to have that opportunity.
Yeah, I feel like I would really love a Magic convention. I feel like there's so many aspects of the game that aren't being explored, whether it's, you know, more casual EDH games going on, or the art that's involved, or the storyline. I mean, I saw when you guys went to PAX that they had, like, really cool big statue thingies mm-hmm. of, like, Eldrazi set up. And just things like that, I think, really round out the game to being more than a card game. I wouldn't really enjoy it if they tried to make every GP into a mini convention, because I'm like Hallie, like, I like the competitive game, but I also feel like in a GP weekend, there's not enough time to do everything I want to do, whether it's playing cool side events, or go look at all the vendors I want to see, or get certain cards signed by certain artists. It seems like there's never enough time to do that all, and so I think if they just had, like, one really big Magic convention every once in a while, it would do a lot to round out the game. And there's also a bunch of people who are like, oh, I'm not good enough to go to a GP. And you tell them, you don't have to be good to go to a GP. And they're like, well, if you're not good, then there's not really, like, a point in going. And I think something like this is a good stepping stone towards getting more people into it.
I think that people tend to forget, like, how much of the fan base is competitive. It's not very much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we live in a vacuum where, you know, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're in our forums, we're in our Reddit, and we just assume that everybody's living that lifestyle. But the majority of people don't go to opens and don't go to GPs. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things you could offer at a convention that you couldn't offer at a GP. Like when we were at PAX, they had panels about the art where you could meet Jeremy Jarvis and you could meet Ari Levitch and things like that. And you could hear about the world building and things like that. And, you know, rather than have it just be like a once a year thing, you could have it be, you know, maybe a twice a year thing or three times a year thing. And you could get a chance to ask these designers, you know, what happened between Drana and Kalidas, which is something I was really interested in and was never really explained. Or you could ask them, you know, why is Nahiri so mad? Or just, you know, get a chance to ask all those lore questions, or even art questions, or things like that. Or just have, like, beginner events. Like, we had the learn to play section where we taught people how to play. That was a big hit. And, like, you know, a lot of times with new players, you know, we sell FNM as being this place you can go to, but you still could run into a tier one deck and get your butt kicked. But if you were to go to this event and really just have it be like a beginner event where, like, you're going in, you know, they're very, you know, you get a box of cards, they're not that great, but you can still play a game of Magic, you know, that's an opportunity to get more people to learn how to play the game. Sprinkle said that when she was cosplaying in Albuquerque, she had so many people coming up to her and saying, you got any cards? Like, we'd love to play Magic. And she was like, can someone get me some intro packs, please? And, you know, that's a great way to get the game out there. Just have really simple, very casual events, almost no prize support, you know, get people to learn the game, maybe even get people how to play Moto, or get people how to play Duels. And, you know, just target a different demographic that doesn't often get things aimed at them. One of the reasons I think I've always said that Magic the Amateuring was such a big hit was they aimed themselves at that demographic. You know, they were like, we are going to make a show for people who, you know, can't afford the biggest decks necessarily, or have no interest in getting on the train. And they've become a massive success because of that. And so that shows that that's definitely a demographic that doesn't often get aimed at, or have things aimed at them. And they're dying for that. You know, they want more. So, anything else before we wrap up the show?
I had a couple things I wanted to say. Okay. First of all, I wanted to give a shout out to my friend David Jackson, who won his PPTQ this past Saturday. He is one of the people I test with here in Seattle, and he's been working super hard on mono white humans. So I'm really glad that he finally won a PPTQ, because he's been trying for a long time. And the other thing I wanted to mention was, I've mentioned this many, many episodes ago because it's been a year, but every year Card Kingdom and Mox Boarding House, the local stores here in Seattle, hold a charity tournament called The Gauntlet, where they invite a bunch of different game companies and gaming-related organizations to compete and raise money for charity. So I'm going to be participating again this year on behalf of the Lady Planeswalker Society. If you would like to donate, we're raising money for an organization called Youth Care, which raises money for homeless and struggling youth and teenagers. So if you'd like to donate, I'll definitely post a link to it on Twitter. You can check out hashtag MoxGauntlet, where we'll be talking about that. And yeah, we have some sweet rewards for people who donate too.
When is the deadline for that?
The tournament itself is going to be on Sunday, May 15th, and we'll be raising money through then.
Cool. Super. Definitely give me a nudge before then, and I'll definitely toss you some money, because that's a great
cause.
Sweet,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I had something to add. I saw something today that reminded me of you, Chris. Have you ever heard of a Twitter account called Cats on Mats?
Like play mats?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're familiar?
Yeah.
Okay. So for those who don't know, it's basically a Twitter account. Somebody has a lot of playmats, and they just like to arrange their cats strategically on them. So if you're into cats, or you're into playmats, or you're into cats on playmats, you need to follow, I think it's just Cats on Mats, at Cats on Mats. It is delightfully adorable. And the minute I saw that, I was like, I think Chris needs this in her life. but otherwise, we are playing in the SDG Open this weekend in Milwaukee. So if you are there, come say hello to Chris and I. Mrs. Mulligan will be there, as far as we know. Emma Handy will be there. She's going to be staying with me. So I think we're going to have a really good time this weekend. I'll be bringing Ad Nauseam. Chris will be on some version of Tron, you said, or Blue White Tron.
Yep, probably okay, Blue White.
Yeah, we will have stickers, and so come say hi to us, and we hope that you come join us.
Cool.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all, and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/HalCanSan, and you can read my writing here on Gathering Magic.
And I'm Katie. You can follow me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or on Twitch, twitch.tv/meanmuggermtg, or you can Snapchat me at katie.neil14.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at thkriz. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. And my Snapchat is cryptic command with K's. And I would just like to say that Katie is putting out some stellar snaps on her Snapchat account.
Patrick Sullivan just recently joined Snapchat, or he said he was going to. So Crystal Rose, we have to thank her for that. She wore him down.
Thank goodness. That needed to happen.
Yay! Is it my turn?
Yeah,
I think so.
Ah, shit. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. That is OriginalEstrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at @TheGFBracket. You can find us on Twitch at twitch.tv/TheGFBracket. And you can email us at TheGirlfriendBracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.